GoDaddy.com. Use the code BLU139 to get 10% off any combination of purchases at GoDaddy.com. See site for details. Get your piece of the internet at GoDaddy.com. Tango Tango Papa 1357, June 17, 2010.
Have we seen the actual reality of a monstrous crime? Or merely an illusion, the product of a tortured brain?
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. Tom Wiles here with you, coming to you this evening from Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. There was no podcast last night. I picked the load up, yesterday? Early yesterday afternoon at McDonough, Georgia, and then got out of there, ended up making it up to up into Virginia, I think Fairfield, Virginia, and spent the night, you know, slept there basically. And then early this afternoon, I came on up here. It was about four and a half more hours worth of driving up here to Harrisburg, and then I had a midnight appointment Eastern time, and so they got me into the door a bit early, but I was out of there by about 1 o'clock, 1 a.m. And so I'm parked on the side of a street with some other trucks, probably about a mile or so, less than a mile from where I unloaded at. And so right now I'm they sent a load offer that is kind of tight. And so for right now, I'm just kind of ignoring it, because it would sort of require me to just be, you know, kind of hurry. And I'm kind of tired of that. So I think I'll just ignore that and then wait and see if it they give it to somebody else, which is perfectly fine with me. If they want to give it to somebody else, there are other drivers that were around unloading, they can have that load. So in any case, I've got more email, but before I get into that, you know, I've been kind of avoiding, you know, of course I read, you know, a lot of news headlines every day. You know, I'm always checking them, and for the most part, you know, I'll look at the headlines, and then, if, you know, I may look at a story here and there. But, you know, and I've kind of been not really thinking about it all that much. But, you know, I've come across a couple of stories here that I just can't really ignore. And, you know, because it's really indicative of the levels that are the low levels that our society is sinking to. And in any case, there's this congressman. His name is Bob Etheridge, and he is a Democrat, and he's a congressman from North Carolina. And there was a college kid, you know, young couple of guys. They were college age, with a camera. And they say, you know, and I've got the audio for this video. I got it off of YouTube. You know, the guy says, "Hi, Congressman." And the congressman says, "Hi." You know, as the congressman comes walking, you know, they're waiting with a camera. They got like a flip camera. And the college kid asks him, "Do you support the Obama agenda?" And so the congressman knocks the camera down, grabs this guy by the wrist, who are you? You know, and he keeps saying, who are you, over and over again. And, you know, and at one point he grabs the kid by the neck, by the back of the neck, you know, like he's going to choke him. And you got to watch this video. I posted it on my Facebook. You know, I sent a link to it to Facebook. And I'll try to remember to post a link to it in the show notes for this podcast. But this is outrageous. You know, so anyway, I'm going to go ahead and play this audio from this video that I got off of YouTube. This is, you'll hear the kid, you know, the college kid, and that's easily distinguishable. And then this older guy, you know, the guy, the voice saying, who are you? Who are you? That's Bob Etheridge, the congressman from North Carolina. By the way, if I lived in North Carolina, I'd be ashamed to, you know, to say that I lived there with a congressman like this. This guy's a thug.
Hi, Congressman. How are you? Do you fully support the Obama agenda?
Who are you? Who are you?
Who are you?
I'm here for a project, sir.
Tell me who you are.
We're just here for a project, sir.
Tell me who you are.
We're just here for a project.
I don't care about people like on my hands. Tell me who you are.
I'm just a student, sir.
Tell me who
we're
you
just
are.
Students. That's all we are.
I have a right to know who you are,
sir. Sure, all we are students.
So am I. Who are you? Who are you?
Please let go of my arm, sir.
Who are you?
Sir, please.
Congressman, sir. Please let go of me. Who are you?
Okay.
Okay, so there was the audio from this video, and it's a very, clear video. Now, I can just imagine in the fall, you know, when this guy's running for any political office in the future, if I were his opponent or I were advising his opponent, any opponent, I don't care if he runs for dog catcher. This video would be, you know, right in the campaign ads against him, because this is absurd. You know, here's this guy, grabbing this kid, grabs him by the wrist, and then grabs him by the back of the neck. I mean, he really grabs him. You can really see it in the video. So, in any case, I've got an article about this, and this article is from the Washington Post, and it's interesting. I want to read this article because it's interesting about, you know, it's kind of written in a way that is trying to soothe maybe the Democrat Party or people that are, the Democrats that are really kind of upset about this happening, and Etheridge possibly ending up losing the election in November because of this. It's written, you know, it's kind of twisted logic and rationalizations. So in any case, this is from the Washington Post. Bob Etheridge and the political power or lack thereof of a gaffe. North Carolina Representative Bob Etheridge's confrontation on a Washington street with someone trying to videotape him immediately led to speculation that Democrat incumbent had badly jeopardized his chances of winning re-election this November. Conservative blogs like Red State and National Review's The Corner quickly leapt on the episode to highlight the heretofore unknown candidacy of nurse Renee Elmers. The National Republican Congressional Committee reached out to Elmers as well. According to a source familiar with the organization's operations, Elmers, for her part, told the Charlotte Observer that donations from across the country had flooded into her campaign in the immediate aftermath of the video, adding that the incident does put a whole different spectrum to who Etheridge is. And then here comes the rationalization part. Maybe. But the history of political gaffes and their impact on the re-election chances of the member of Congress involved would suggest that while Elmer's will certainly raise more money than she might otherwise have done, she had $5,462 on hand as of mid-May, her chances of winning the race won't vastly improve. The most instructive example from the recent political past is in Minnesota during the 2008 election, roughly 2 weeks before the election of Representative Michelle Bachmann, Republican, appeared on MSNBC's Hardball and said that then-Senator Barack Obama may have anti-American views. Well, that's true. He does. A massive controversy ensued, but with Democrats casting Bachmann's remarks as a tipping point for voters in her ex-urban Twin Cities seat, the Democrat nominee, Elwin Tinklenberg, raked in $2 million in the space of a week or so as Bachmann became a sort of poster girl for everything people didn't like about Republicans nationally. Then she won, granted the margin 46% for Bachmann, 43% for Tinklenberg. 10% for Independent Party candidate Bob Anderson was far from convincing, but considering that Bachmann committed a gaffe of epic proportions 2 weeks before an election in which Democrats nearly ran the table nationally, the fact that she won at all was considered somewhat stunning. Bachmann's victory serves as a reminder that context, particularly the demographic kind, matters. Bachmann sits in a quiet... he's got a mistake here. In a quite. He's got Q-U-I-T-E, and he meant to say quiet. In a... Maybe, I don't know. In a quite... Oh, okay, I guess he's written it right. Bachmann sits in a quite conservative district. President Obama took just 45% of the vote, while he was carrying the state with 54% in 2008. That meant there was a significant enough chunk of conservative voters to stand by Bachmann no matter what she said about the president. Ditto for the South Carolina Representative Joe Wilson, a Republican who caused a national controversy of his own when he shouted out, "You lie," during President Obama's address to a joint session of Congress last fall. Immediately after the episode, Democrats around the country promised that Wilson's outburst would spell his electoral doom and flooded challenger Rob Miller's Democrat campaign with donations. But conservatives replied in kind, sending millions in contributions to Wilson. By mid-May, Wilson had raised $3.9 million for the campaign, while Miller had collected $2.3 million, amazing totals for a House race this far before an election. Lost in all the money, however, was the fact that Wilson's second district is reliably Republican and that Wilson hasn't dipped below 63% in any election since winning the seat in 2001 special election. It's that context that should make Democrats feel better about the Etheridge aftermath. Etheridge has held the second district seat since 1996 and prior to that spent 7 years as the superintendent of public instruction, a statewide post. Wonder how many people how many students he assaulted when he was superintendent of public instruction. What the hell is that? While his district is potentially competitive, President George W. Bush won it by 8 points in 2004. Etheridge has demonstrated a record of running and winning in elections, good and bad, for his party. Also, even Republicans acknowledge that Elmer's is entirely unformed as a candidate, nowhere near as developed as even Miller or Tinklenberg, who both had some campaign infrastructure to take advantage of the incumbent slip. The simple fact is that there are far more occasions when a gaffe slowed but did not stop an incumbent's march to re-election than where the gaffe caused a loss. The one notable example of the latter category is Senator George Allen's Makaka comment that led to a fundamental re-examining of the incumbent by the state's voters. It's far more likely, at least today, that Etheridge will fall into the bent but not broken category of political gaffesmanship. So he's using words, you know, the people that are just saying things, and they're saying that they're gaffes. Sometimes, you know, some of these examples he's giving really aren't, but he's saying that they are. But in any case, this guy's actually physically grabbing someone. And there are people on television that are actually saying, "Oh, well, if somebody shoved a camera in my face, I'd kick their ass. The congressman was right. He should grab him. Well, go ahead. Just go out. You know, now let's turn the tables. Let's just think about this for a minute. You know, people are saying they're Democrats and they're lefties, lefty Democrats, that are saying, oh, well, it's okay that this Congressman Etheridge grabbed this kid because the kid had a camera and he was, how dare he ask a question like that, because that's kind of like, asking a Democrat whether he supports Obama's agenda on camera is like yelling fire in a crowded theater, to a Democrat, because of course he supports the agenda, but he doesn't want to say so because Obama's becoming radioactive. But, you know, here he is grabbing people, but let's just think about this for a minute. In Arizona, a policeman can't even ask an illegal alien who they are. They can't, if they stop them for some reason, they can't ask them, well, are you legal? Are you here legally? Yet this congressman thinks he can just, grab the college student by the neck and who are you? Who are you? I have a right to know. Well, don't we have a right to know who the illegal aliens, if they're illegal? This guy thinks he's above the law. He's a congressman. He's the elite. That's how they think. He looked at this college kid as some kind of scum. It's ridiculous. But if this woman, hopefully, people will send her money. He mentioned it here once or twice. Let me see if I can find it. Renee Elm L or it's Renee R E N E E E L L M E R S. People should send her money, and hopefully the Republicans will get in there and help her set up a campaign structure. And then plaster this video all over the place. Of him assaulting the college student. It's ridiculous. Let's see here. What else do we have? School kids chant, I am an Obama scholar. School children are led by a teacher in a chant that begins with, I will be anything I want to be. At one point during the incantation, the teacher asked the students to repeat the phrase, I am an Obama scholar. And so I have the audio for that. God. So here we go. Children being taught to chant, I am an Obama scholar.
She teach our guests our chant. Who's going to help me today? Who's going to help me this morning? Or this afternoon? All right, come on. Everybody, come on. This is what we do, brothers. Yeah, everybody ready? Especially in light of what's going on. Everybody ready? Mountain!
Mountain!
Move out of my way.
Move out of my way.
Mountain!
Mountain!
Move out of my way.
Move out of my way.
Mountain of guns!
Mountain of guns!
Move out of my way.
Move out of my way.
Mountain of drugs!
Mountain of drugs!
Move out of my way.
Move out of my way.
Mountain of violence!
Mountain of violence!
Move out of my way.
Move out of my way.
Mountain of ignorance!
Mountain of ignorance!
Move out of my way.
Move out of my way.
Because I am somebody.
Somebody.
And I can be.
And I can be.
And I will be.
And I will be.
Anything.
Anything.
Anything. I want to be.
I want to be.
Doctor,
lawyer,
judge,
journalist,
writer,
firefighter,
principal,
president,
president,
anything
I want to be. If
my mind
can't conceive it,
and my heart
can't believe it,
then
I know,
I know,
I know,
I know,
I can achieve it.
For I
am an Obama scholar.
An
Obama scholar. And I will strive to be, outstanding,
brilliant.
I will achieve.
I'll
be motivated.
Positive attitude.
Positive attitude. Mountain,
move out of my way.
Give yourselves a hand, nigga. Back.
Thank you. Okay, so there are the these are from Lincoln Bassett Middle School in New Haven, Connecticut, being taught to chant, "I am an Obama scholar." God. And you wonder why I think the schools have gone to pot. They were bad when I went to school. But I can only imagine what they're like today. How dehumanizing they are. And then there's this. Of course, you know, there's been this ongoing oil spill. And it's continuing. There's this, how can you escape it if you turn on a TV or even look on a lot of websites and you've got this oil, this BP oil spill cam that's just plastered everywhere with the oil leaking out of the bottom of the ocean. And, of course, now we have images of the oil washing up on Alabama beaches, washing up on Florida beaches. Cuba is bracing for oil to wash up on their beaches. This should have been stopped soon after it happened. There were offers from a lot of different places to assist with this early on, and our government turned it down, you know, because of they didn't get the paperwork right or whatever. I think that the Obama administration is using this. They want to extend this, make it as bad as possible. You know, never let a good crisis go to waste. Make the crisis as bad as possible, and then they can get everybody all upset. And then, because that's the key, getting people agitated. He's an agitator. That's what a community organizer is an agitator. Get everybody so upset that they'll do something stupid, that they'll go along with something stupid. Every time you get upset. Have you ever done anything when you're upset? Usually that's when you make your worst mistakes. It's when you're upset, when you're mad. But in any case, this article, bullied into a £13 billion cave-in, Obama forces British Petroleum to set up huge compensation fund for U.S. oil spill victims, and British pensioners will pick up the bill. How do you like that? The crisis engulfing British Petroleum plumbed new depths last night as President Obama bullied the company into depositing £13.5 billion into a fund to settle compensation claims for the calamitous Gulf of Mexico oil spill. After a face-to-face showdown with President at the White House, BP Chairman Carl Henrik Svanberg revealed the payment meant the oil giant would be forced to suspend dividends to its shareholders until at least next year. The news sent BP shares plunging to a 14-year low of 3.37 pounds, and is a major blow for Britain's pension funds, which rely on BP's dividend income to provide £1 in every £6 they receive each year. I wonder how many people in the Democrat Party, in the Obama administration, have put in, you know, that are doing the I had the term and it kind of went out of my mind, but you make money when the stock is going to plummet. Stop orders, sell orders. You can make money as the thing goes down. You know, you think it's going to go down, and so you there's ways of I can't think of the term, but you make money, you know, as the thing falls. So in any case, this goes on. Since the fatal explosion in April, the value of the company, formerly Britain's biggest, has halved to £63 billion. BP's back down came as David Cameron finally broke his controversial silence over Mr. Obama's attacks on the company. The Prime Minister revealed he told President Obama not to go after BP for the sake of it. Yesterday's dramatic capitulation came as U.S. officials and lawmakers escalated the ugly rhetoric over the disaster. Vietnamese-born Congressman Joseph K-O-C-A-O, Chow, I don't know how that's pronounced, went so far as to suggest that the only honorable way for BP bosses to atone for the environmental crisis was to commit suicide. In the Asian culture, we do things differently, he said. During the samurai days, we'd just give you a knife and ask you to commit harikiri. Yesterday's four-hour meeting ended with the companies capitulating to Mr. Obama's rescue fund ultimatum and offering an apology to the American people. Mr. Svanberg and Chief Executive Tony Hayward were told that either they agreed to set up the multi-billion pound escrow account or the Americans would rush through laws to force them. Announcing the freeze on dividends, Mr. Svanberg tried to smooth over the troubled waters, saying BP and the U.S. government were fully aligned in handling the crisis. He said, "We made it clear to the president that words are not enough. We understand that we will and we should be judged by our actions. BP has canceled the first quarter payment that was due on June 21. Mr. Svanberg said the second and third quarter dividends would be suspended, a major blow for Britain's pension funds. The move will also hit American investors. While 40% of BP's major shareholders are in Britain, Americans have a 39% stake in the multinational company. BP also reportedly has twice as many American as British employees." Happy that he had achieved his goal in reaching agreement on the escrow fund, Mr. Obama offered his first words of support for BP after weeks of ferocious criticism that has helped slash the company's market value in half. The president said, "We will continue to hold BP and all other responsible parties accountable, and I am absolutely confident BP will be able to meet its obligations to the Gulf Coast and to the American people. BP is a strong, viable company, and it is in all of our interests that it remains so." Six BP executives, including Mr. Hayward and Mr. Svanberg, arrived at the White House at 10 a.m. yesterday for the much-vaunted meeting. Although he had just returned from a two-day visit to the Gulf, Mr. Obama said he was to be at the meeting for just 20 minutes, leaving the bulk of the negotiation to aides. Mr. Hayward faces an even tougher grilling in Congress today, with one Senate member, Bart Stupak, saying he expected the British executive to be sliced and diced. Earlier in the day, Sir Richard Branson denounced Mr. Obama's attacks on BP. The Virgin Atlantic president accused Mr. Obama of unseemly behavior and repeatedly kicking a company while it was on its knees. Sir Richard is one of the most senior businessmen to go on the offensive over Mr. Obama's series of broadsides against BP and Mr. Hayward. He was speaking at a press conference in Las Vegas to mark the 10th anniversary of Virgin flying into the city. He said, "I do believe when someone has made a mistake, they should be criticized. BP deserves to be criticized, but so do the regulators and the American government for not regulating the situation properly. Dame Helen Mirren wasn't so patriotic, attacking BP on American Chat Show by saying the company's initials stood for bloody piss poor. The 64-year-old star, who won an Oscar for her portrayal of the Queen, told late-night host David Letterman she might have canceled her appearance had England fared better in their opening World Cup game against the U.S. She said, "I don't think I could have come on this show. I would have been so embarrassed and mortified at being British that I think I would have had to cancel." Meanwhile, U.S. government experts have released a much higher estimate of the amount of oil gushing from the BP well. They said as many as 60,000 barrels a day may be spewing out, a sharp increase from last week's estimate of 25,000 to 30,000 barrels. Days after the blast, BP was claiming just 1,000 barrels a day were leaking from the blown-out well. David Cameron broke his silence over BP yesterday after being accused of failing to defend the company from a ferocious onslaught by the White House. The Prime Minister said BP was an important firm and revealed he told President Obama not to go after the company for the sake of it. Mr. Cameron also insisted that compensation claims against BP must be reasonable, suggesting the U.S. administration should drop suggestions that the company pay for other oil companies' lost revenue from a six-month moratorium on deep-water drilling. Callers to a radio phone-in yesterday challenged the Prime Minister on why he had not publicly backed the embattled oil company. Appearing on BBC Radio 2's Jeremy Vine phone-in, Mr. Cameron made his first remarks in support of BP. Previously, he had expressed understanding for U.S. fury over the oil spill. One caller, Julie Cortines, said, I think we should stand up for BP a bit more and that Obama should look closer to home for people to blame for this. Mike Cameron from Dundee said, why doesn't David Cameron answer back to Mr. Obama? He should be standing up for BP. David Cameron said, what President Obama and I agreed is that BP is an important company, and this shouldn't be about going after BP for the sake of it. It should be about dealing with this environmental disaster. And, you know, it's kind of ironic, you know, because they can't, they're going to have to, you know, basically cut their dividends. And you have a lot of people that own stock, and, you know, and they rely on that stock, you know. You know, people that are, you know, the pensioners, people that are retired, and they rely on that, and all of a sudden now it's not there. So, and then we have this. You know, here's Obama, you know, you have to set this aside for the oil spill victims. Obama administration spends $1.2 billion on cycling and walking initiatives. The Obama administration more than doubled spending on cycling and walking initiatives to $1.2 billion last year as it seeks to coax Americans out of their cars. Spending on biking and walking projects rose from less than $600 million in 2008, according to the Federal Highway Administration. 20 years ago, the federal government was spending only $6 million a year on such projects. The spending, the spending on biking and walking projects was scheduled to rise last year anyway, but the administration boosted it with $400 million in funds set aside under the Economic Recovery Program. The new focus on biking and walking represents a turnaround from the administration of President George W. Bush. Mary Peters, Transportation Secretary under Bush, dismissed biking paths and trails as projects that are really not transportation, saying they had no place in the federal transportation policy. In March, Mr. Obama's Transportation Secretary, Ray LaHood, announced a policy sea change that gives biking and walking projects the same importance as automobiles and transportation planning and the selection of projects for federal money. The new policy is an extension of the Obama administration's livability initiative, which regards the creation of alternatives to driving, buses, streetcars, and trains, as well as biking and walking, as central to solving the nation's transportation woes. Biking and walking is on the rise, according to the report, which is based on annual survey data. The number of reported walking trips has more than doubled since the first survey, from 18 billion in 1990 to 42.5 billion in 2009. Bicycling trips saw a similar increase, from 1.2 billion to 4 billion during the same period. Together, the two modes account for 11.9% of all reported trips by Americans. Biking is less than 1% of the total. Americans want and need safe alternatives to driving, Mr. LaHood said in a statement. By making biking and walking safer and more accessible, we'll be able to provide Americans with more choices and help foster more active, livable communities. Oh, God. It's insane. And if that's not enough, new bill gives Obama kill switch to shut down the internet. The federal government would have absolute power to shut down the internet under the terms of a new U.S. Senate bill being pushed by Joe Lieberman, legislation which would hand President Obama's figurative kill switch to seize control of the World Wide Web in response to a Homeland Security directive. Lieberman has been pushing for government regulation of the Internet for years under the guise of cybersecurity, but But this new bill goes even farther in handing emergency powers over to the feds, which could be used to silence free speech under the pretext of a national emergency. The legislation says that the companies such as broadband providers, search engine, or software firms in the U.S. government select shall immediately comply with any emergency measure or action developed by the Department of Homeland Security. Anyone failing to comply would be fined, reports ZDNet's Declan McCullough. The 197-page bill is entitled Protecting Cyberspace as a National Asset, or PCNAA. Technology lobbying group Tech America warned that the legislation created the potential for absolute power, while the Center for Democracy and Technology worried that the bill's emergency powers included authority to shut down or limit internet traffic on private systems. The bill has the vehement support of Senator Jay Rockefeller, who last year asked during a congressional hearing, "Would it have been better if we had never invented the internet while fear-mongering about cyber terrorists preparing attacks?" The largest internet-based corporations are seemingly happy with the bill, primarily because it contains language that will give them immunity from civil lawsuits and also reimburse them for any costs incurred if the internet is shut down for a period of time. If there's an incident related to the cyber vulnerability after the president has declared an emergency and the affected company has followed federal standards, plaintiff's lawyers cannot collect damages for economic harm. And if the harm is caused by an emergency order from the feds, not only does the possibility of damages virtually disappear, but the U.S. Treasury will even pick up the private company's tab, writes McCullough. Tom Gann, McAfee's vice president for government relations, described the bill as a very important piece of legislation. "As we have repeatedly warned for years, the federal government is desperate to seize control of the internet because the establishment is petrified at the fact that alternative and independent media outlets are now eclipsing corporate media outlets in terms of audience share, trust, and influence. We witnessed another example of this on Monday when establishment Congressman Bob Etheridge was publicly shamed, after he was shown on video assaulting two college students who asked him a question. The two kids with a flip cam and a YouTube account could very well have changed the course of a state election, another startling reminder of the power of the internet and independent media, and why the establishment is desperate to take that power away. The government has been searching for any avenue possible through which to regulate free speech on the internet and strangle alternative media outlets, with the Federal Trade Commission recently proposing a drudge tax that would force independent media organizations to pay fees that would be used to fund mainstream newspapers. Similar legislation aimed at imposing Chinese-style censorship on the internet and giving the state the power to shut down networks has already been passed globally, including in the UK, New Zealand, and Australia. We have extensively covered efforts to scrap the internet as we know it and move toward a greatly restricted Internet 2 system. Handing government the power to control the internet would only be the first steps toward this system, whereby individual IDs and government permission would be required simply to operate a website. The Lieberman bill needs to be met with fierce opposition at every level and from across the political spectrum. Regulation of the internet would not only represent a massive assault on free speech, it would also create new roadblocks for e-commerce and, as a consequence, further devastate the economy." And I agree with that. Okay, so anyway, let's go ahead and jump into the email. So this is an email from Bob from Colorado. He says, "Tom, listening to your podcast number 1208, where you're talking about atheists, count me in the atheist camp as a listener. I bet you had other people write in after you mentioned it. I do agree with you about the universe must have come from somewhere somehow. I don't think either side of the evolution debate is correct. Scientists think they have an answer, but all they have is the opposite answer from the church. People just like to have an answer. People just like to have an answer, period. Doesn't much matter what the answer is often. People grab onto the one that speaks to them. I don't think the classic Big Bang Theory makes sense unless there were things before it. I'm happy not knowing the answer. It will be found someday, maybe a long, long time from now. Both sides are just fooling themselves if they think they are correct. Again, people just want an answer and will hold on to it no matter what. And, of course, church has so many reasons for people to go. The large megachurches have so much going on all the time. They have classes, child care, teen groups, young adult groups, and more. Much more. There must be a large group of churchgoers who don't really think about God, or rather the deep down bias upon which they believe. They just like the fellowship and activities. The true count of atheists is much larger than people think. I think the official number is 14-18% of current acknowledged atheists. I hung out behind the agnostic label for years. The two or three times I attended church was for my wife. I had hid my atheism for a long time, 33 years of marriage, but lately I've talked to her about my thoughts. She listens and tells her side. Works out great. I just make sure I don't try to convince her of anything. Now she did the same. Strict religious people are explicitly told not to read and listen to anything that contradicts the church. They purposefully close their minds. They won't let anything in. If God somehow actually shows himself, which he could easily do, he used to, who could deny that? Atheists would be thrilled to find that out. Instead, the reasons to believe in God are all mental games. I listen to many religious atheist debates. Watch out when a religious person says, therefore, that's when they take that leap of faith, i.e. the universe could not just appear. Therefore, there is a God. Atheists just don't take that leap past that, and therefore, unless there is evidence. And, of course, there are many crazy atheists out there, just like crazy church people, can't get past human nature. Love your podcast. Really enjoy hearing about trucking and your views. Looking forward to many more. Hope the loads have increased. I had been laid off and am out of work for 16 months. Just found a part-time job. No benefits, but a paycheck of some sort. My previous job went overseas, IT database work. Avoid HP. They make great products, but don't care about their employees. Stockholders count, employees don't. Maybe I should move to India. That's where the jobs are going. Thanks, and that's from Bob from Monument, Colorado. And I don't know. You know, ultimately, I don't think that it really matters whether you say you believe in God or not. That's really, despite what people tell you, I really think that's unimportant. What is really important, when it comes right down to it, are you genuine? Are you a genuine person? How do you know if you're asleep or awake? There's something that tells you that, hey, I'm awake. I'm awake right now, or I'm not asleep, I'm awake, I'm conscious, I'm awake. How do you know that? How do you know the difference between right and wrong? My mom told me, or my dad told me, or somebody taught me the difference. Two plus two? You know, the answer is four, of course. Well, how do you know that? A lot of people will respond, because I was taught that. You know, not that I see it for myself, but that they were taught it. And you've got to be able to, if you can see things for yourself, that's the key to being genuine. And that's all that matters. I'm convinced of it. So, anyway, thank you, Bob. Okay, let's see what else we have. Skip that. I don't know if I've read this one before or not, but this is a story that was sent by Scott. Internet addicts guilty of starving baby to death. This is Seoul, South Korea. South Korean couple were convicted Friday of abandoning their newborn daughter, who starved to death while they addictively played an online game raising a virtual child. The husband, a 41-year-old taxi driver, and his 25-year-old wife were sentenced to 2 years in prison, but the woman's term was suspended because she is pregnant. The couple played in internet cafes on average 10 hours every day and bottle-fed their baby only once a day, prosecutors said in an affidavit. The girl, who was born prematurely and weighed 5 pounds, was often fed rotten formula and was beaten when she cried out of hunger, the affidavit said. They found her dead when they returned to their home in Suwon, just south of Seoul. After an all-night gaming session last September, the ruling said, they hid at a relative's home after an autopsy found the baby died of malnutrition. This constitutes an inhumane crime where the defendants abandon even the most basic responsibilities as parents and is unforgivable beyond any excuse of reason, the Suwon District Court said in the ruling. The mother will avoid jail time if she stays out of trouble for 3 years. The couple, who have only been identified by their surnames Kim, have 7 days to appeal. And so they're trying to say that, well, they were internet addicts, evil internet, internet bad, caused these people to be what they were. They're rotten people, obviously. The case shocked South Korea and raised concerns over the severity of online gaming and the internet addiction in a nation of 49 million. The government says there are 2 million internet addicts in the nation, considered one of the world's most technologically wired. Senate, this was also sent by Scott. Senate antitrust leaders fear Comcast will kneecap Hulu. As a child growing up in Wisconsin, visits to the department store Kohl's were a yearly rite of passage, providing a pair of back-to-school pants at 50% off. My youthful self squirming in discomfort every time the mom called back to the changing room. How do those fit in the crotch? She could have never predicted that one day, decades in the future, the owner of the store would sit in Congress and try to keep Comcast away from Hulu in an effort to defend internet delivery of shows like Lost. Wisconsin Senator Herb Kohl has moved on up from his days as a discount department store magnate, and now he chairs the Senate Subcommittee on Antitrust Competition Policy and Consumer Rights. In that role, he has taken a natural interest in the proposed Comcast-NBC buyout. Yesterday, Kohl outlined his own preferred conditions on such a deal in a letter to the FCC and the Department of Justice, both of which are reviewing the deal. What does Kohl want? Comcast to stay out of Hulu after any purchase? When does he want it? Within a year, out of Hulu for good. Kohl's concern is that the over-the-top internet-delivered video poses a serious challenge to the existing business model of a cable company like Comcast. If Comcast acquires NBC and takes over NBC's 32% stake in Hulu, the company might be tempted to cripple the service or weigh it down with enough conditions to make sure people stick with expensive separate cable subscriptions, Kohl writes. Millions of consumers have begun to utilize internet websites such as Hulu to view full-length programming that has traditionally been shown on cable and broadcast television, and numerous companies are experimenting with new business models for delivering content directly to consumers over high-speed internet connections, including television and Blu-ray disc manufacturers, Apple TV, Roku, Boxy, and Zillion TV. To give a few examples, industry reports have estimated that 800,000 households have even dropped their traditional MVPD, multi-channel TV subscriptions, preferring to view video content over the internet, often referred to as cord cutters. It is clear that the video over the internet has the real potential to become a strong competitive alternative to traditional MVPD providers and offers consumers new choices to obtain video programming without expensive MVPD subscriptions. Herb Kohl, or most likely a staffer, knows about Boxy and Roku, and he's interested in internet video. This is such terrific stuff that we'll forgive him for the Blu-ray comment. Well, now, I don't know about that. See, the Blu-ray, like the Blu-ray player that I have, actually has the streaming stuff built in, so that's not really so far off base. Anyway, this goes on. After the acquisition, Comcast will have the incentive to exercise its influence as part owner of Hulu to ensure it does not become a competitive threat to Comcast cable television services. The letter continues. If Comcast exercised such a strategy, it could effectively starve these new emerging internet distributors out of content they need to compete. Comcast has already begun to roll out its TV Everywhere model of distribution, under which Comcast subscribers can have full access to their cable programming wherever they are. While this business model unquestionably offers benefits to consumers, it could also potentially harm competition should it become the exclusive manner in which programmers deliver their content over the internet. In Cole's view, Comcast should be forced to divest NBC's stake in Hulu within 1 year of the acquisition. In addition, he wants a requirement that Comcast not seek to prevent or coerce programmers from keeping their content off internet websites or internet distributors as a condition of carriage on Comcast. Of course, a cable ISP has all sorts of ways to obtain similar outcome. One could simply slap a tiny data caps on the internet access of the side business, high enough to do web surfing, but low enough to prevent large-scale video viewing. To its credit, Comcast published caps have been relatively generous, 250 gigabytes per month. One could throttle video sites like Hulu. Comcast's recent win in court against the FCC has effectively abolished the agency's existing claims to net neutrality oversight. Cole's requests bring political pressure on the agencies to impose these kind of conditions, but Cole has no direct authority over the deal. Comcast sent over a statement about the letter, one expecting that any conditions will not unduly burden either Comcast or NBC Universal's businesses. And let's see what else. I just happen to remember something. I got an audio comment from Ian and for a day or two ago, and I haven't played it yet, so I want to play it. And then we might have time for a little bit more email. So here is the comment from Ian.
Good morning, Tom. It is 6:30 in the morning, and I just finished listening to your podcast. I found it very interesting because you're discovering all the new things that are so fantastic on your little phone. One thing I might have missed, did you mention the GPS functions on these things? They are absolutely astounding. The way that they tell you everything and show you everything. Maybe you could mention that on your next podcast, the whole GPS thing about it. The other thing you mentioned, that you can post video and photos right to your Facebook page or Twitter page. I think Facebook page would be better because it's easier to sort of get there and relax and look at a little bit, whereas Twitter sort of goes by and you might miss it. So I'd really be interested to hear what you have to say about the GPS, and I'd love to see lots of photos being posted to your Facebook page daily at this point now, or even little videos. That'd be great. I hope you get to know what you're supposed to do with your load today. It sounds like it's sort of a mystery load, and we'll talk to you later. Maybe I understand why your Fring application did not work. You said since your update there it was giving you a problem. I hope that it doesn't take them 2 months to do an update on that. There are some other applications which maybe you could use which would connect to Skype. There's one called IM Plus or something that I think does the same thing. But anyways, we can look into that. So we'll fire this off now and have a great day.
All right. Well, thank you, Ian. Yes, the GPS works spectacularly well, I've actually got two choices. I've got the Google, you know, it's integrated with Google Latitude, Google Maps, and it, you know, it gives spoken directions. You know, it tells you to turn right on whichever street really works well. And then the other choice is the one that Sprint always gives you, you know, with their GPS. It's just the standard one. I think it's powered by Telenav, and it works well, too. It was in my other phone. So got two different choices. But I really like the Google Latitude because you can just... basically, you can do a local search for local businesses, things that are close to you, and then you it brings up a list, and you can actually look at each one, and there's comments in there sometimes from people commenting on, you know, rating the whatever it is, if it's a restaurant or whatever it is, and then you can just tell it, navigate, go to it, give me directions to that, and, you know, it gives you the address, you got the address there. So I can program that into my regular Garmin GPS if I wish. And then also there's a phone number. And if you want to call that place, if it's a pizza place, you just tap on the phone number and it calls it. So very, very cool how they've, you know, that they've integrated everything in there together. So now that Fring, that just kind of mysteriously started working again. So, you know, it may kind of depend on their service, because I didn't change anything in the phone. It just kind of started working. And actually, Ian was able to call me this evening, and we actually had a two-way video chat, a video call. You know, I could see him, and he could see me. So that actually does work. Anyway, let's see. How much more email is left? Well, we're almost all the way through it, so I think I'll go ahead and just finish it, and we may run a little long. Anyway, thank you, Ian, for your audio comment. There's another email. I think it's probably from Bob. He says, Tom, thanks for replying. I have problems with depression and anxiety. This is a different Bob, I believe. I have tried to really listen to what you have said about resentment. It has not clicked with me yet, but it sure makes more sense than the useless pills I don't take anymore. And frankly, doing something like truck driving would be much more suited to my personality. IT work, same Bob, I think, tends to have too many things where if you do it wrong, everything stops working. It gets old, of course, with driving. You have the same thing. Can't let your guard down on the road. Thanks. And that's from Bob. So thank you, Bob. And let's see. And this was an article that Ian sent. It says, whoops, Sprint aired, says Evo 4G launch sales much lower than claimed. And this is from the rather biased MacDailyNews.com. And I talked about that a little bit in the last podcast, you know, the era, because they seem, there was another article, and that Mac Daily News kind of seems biased, you know, and they should just come out and say, hey, we're Mac fanboys, we're going to just dump on everything that's not Mac and be done with it. But, you know, that just, when I get an approach like that from, you know, if someone takes that sort of approach, that's just biased, mindlessly biased, then if they come out with some other, an opinion on something that's not related, how can you trust it? You can't. So, but anyway, thank you, Ian, for bringing that to my attention. That site, let's see here. And then Matt posted this from Facebook. He said, great podcast, waiting for a new gadget or toy is a killer. LOL, may patience be with you, buddy. And so thank you, Matt. And this is Amy from Facebook. She said, get a pretzel at Gus while you're there, or Haddon's for chicken. And I'm not sure where I was then. They were responding to a post where I, you know, I had mentioned where I was waiting at, and now I can't remember where that was at. I don't remember. Anyway, thank you, Amy. Then Matt from Facebook, he says, where are you delivering your load in ad in St. Louis? I live in the area, just wondering. And that was from a few days ago, and I was actually in East St. Louis at Edwardsville, Illinois. Kind of, you know, in East, you know, in the East St. Louis area on the, you know, in the St. Louis area, but on the Illinois side of the Mississippi River. Then, let's see, Steve had put a comment, or he put a comment in my website, TruckerTomPodcast.com. He commented on episode 1354. He says, hi, Tom, glad to hear you're enjoying the Evo. The wife and I both got one. I much agree with you about the Evo being the best phone I've had as well. And motor safely, and that's Steve from Clayton, North Carolina. So thank you, Steve. And then Mark Vanderberg, that does the, I think, what is it? It's Gun Rights Radio Network, I believe. And he's got, you know, podcasts, and then he's got a kind of an aggregation of a bunch of gun rights related podcasts. Anyway, he says, now that you have the HTC Evo, Google Latitude will be much more useful to your listeners. Now, when I'm listening to your latest podcast at work, I can also check and see where you are located since the last episode was released. Hopefully someday you will get close enough to me and I will know enough in advance to contact you and meet up for lunch or dinner. And that was from Mark, so thank you, Mark. And it really does work well, the tracking. You know, because I've got a badge on my website, TruckerTomPodcast.com, on the left, little ways down the page on the left, and that actually is updated every time the phone automatically updates my location to Google Latitude. That badge is automatically updated. Now, I'm not sure what the interval, whatever the default interval is what I've left it set at, and but that works pretty well. So anyway, thank you, Mark. Let's see here. Then Ken had sent this article, 600,000 iPhone 4s pre-ordered in 24 hours. Apple apologizes for ordering issues. Pre-orders are completely sold out. We were amazed last night to see both Apple and AT&T sell out of iPhone 4 pre-order units despite the sustained ordering issues, and now we know why Apple managed to move 600,000 iPhones in just a single day. Yes, that's a lot. Apple says it's the largest number of pre-orders it's ever taken in one day. And AT&T says it's 10 times as many orders as it took for the iPhone 3GS. It's not all sunshine and roses, though. Apple also is apologizing to the large number of people who simply couldn't get through yesterday. And AT&T's suspended pre-orders entirely until the device is back in stock. We're guessing AT&T might also be putting the stopper on things while it gets those pesky security issues under control. But there's a chance the carrier is just trying to deal with the insane order volume coming from Apple's servers. It served up 13 million eligibility checks yesterday, shattering the previous record by 3 times. Yeah, but AT&T's network still sucks, so who cares when so many killer Android phones are coming out? All in all, it looks like Apple has a hot item on its hands here, almost too hot to handle. Now, if they could improve the reception and call quality of AT&T's network, we might have something. Update, looks like that ships-by date just slipped once more from July 2nd to July 14. Yikes, and that is assuming everything works out. Otherwise, it could be the end of July. Well, there's a... Get you, you know, if you can get your hands on it, the HTC Evo, is a nice alternative, but it's sold out too. Sorry. let's see here. And then finally, there's a final... I got this email today from Caleb. I think it was today. It says, Tom, Caleb again, found an awesome free app on the Android market and had to share it. It's called AutoRing, AutoRing. It lets you put your phone on silent and still receive calls from contacts you choose. Great for sleeping through unwanted calls and still being available to those who you choose. P.S. Netflix has hired a developer to bring streaming video right to Android devices. Look for it sometime this fall. I have a Verizon Air card and have had for quite some time. I'm still grandfathered into the unlimited data plan, and they seem to honor it with no questions asked. I am a very heavy data user and average around 10 gigs a month on that card. I imagine you should not run into any problems with Verizon honoring your unlimited plan. Let's just hope it stays that way. And that's from Caleb, so thank you, Caleb. And by the way, before I forget to mention it, I'm planning on beginning to write articles about, I think primarily about Android, you know, and apps for the Android, you know, and then maybe, you know, kind of general mobile smartphone, smartphone type topics, and, you know, just kind of, you know, whenever the mood strikes. And once I start writing those articles, I'll let you know where you can go to find them. So, but I think the mobile thing is very interesting. What is happening with the sort of the convergence of, you know, the internet coming to mobile devices? That's really what has happened, and it's in the process of still happening. But it's really happening in a big way at this point. And, you know, not, a, you know, because everybody is carrying around their phone, and they have been for some time. But now it becomes possible for that phone to really become a useful little computer. And that leads the way to all kinds of innovations. So, you know, it's interesting stuff to think about and to write about. So anyway, probably better be getting this thing uploaded, get headed to bed, so I can get up in the morning and find out where I'm going to be going next. Hope everyone is having a great week so far. And I will catch you later.
Remember, Trucker Tom is like Visa. He's everywhere you want to be.
Product reviews, restaurant reviews, photos, opinions, and more. Visit Trucker Tom's website at www.truckerphoto.com. You've been listening to Trucker Tom's podcast, and we'd love to hear what you have to say. All you have to do is send us an email to tom@truckerphoto.com.